thank you for joining Mechon Hadar's Learning of Pirkei Avot in honor of our 10th year celebration. This week's Dvar Torah is by Rabbi Ethan Tucker.
This week's Mishnayot are Perek Hei, Mishnayot Chaf through Chaf Gimel, Chapter 5, Mishnayot 20 through 23. Let's begin with Mishnah Chaf, Mishnah number 20. Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Yehuda the son of Tema says, Heve az kanamer, be bold like a leopard, vekal kanasher, and swift like an eagle or a vulture, virat katvi, run quickly like a deer, vigibor ka'ari, and be a brave and strong as a lion. Lasot ritzon avicha shebashamayim, in order to do the will of your father who is in heaven. Why does Yehuda ben Tema compare how strong or swift we should be to these various animals? I think there are two ways of understanding. The first is that there's a classic midrashic trope about nature, right? That just as nature doesn't ask questions, just as nature doesn't disobey God, just as nature doesn't get lazy, the sun never says, I don't want to rise today. So too we, when we serve God, when we do what we are supposed to, what we were created to do, we should have this same kind of attitude, that we just do what we're supposed to do. So just like a lion is strong and he doesn't have to think about it, just like a leopard is brave and he doesn't have to think about it, so too we should be incorporating the great characteristics of nature and use those different strengths to serve God the way that nature serves God. I think the other way of understanding it is almost the opposite, that we are not leopards, and we are not eagles, and we are not lions. And Yehuda ben Tema says, I know that you're human beings, but you are more capable than you think that you are. So why don't you try to stretch yourself? You're never going to be a leopard, but you could try to be as strong as a leopard. You're never going to be a deer, but you can try to pick up the pace. You can be more swift in your performance of the mitzvot. And if you try, maybe you'll become more than you would have thought you could have become before. We continue. Hu haya omer, he would say, az panim legehenom. Someone who is strong of face, which is an idiom that means to be kind of brazen or recalcitrant, legehenom, goes to hell. We actually see the same word, az panim, to be strong in the face, is contrasted to heve az kanamer, to be strong as a leopard, right? That there is a way to use your strength, and that is to be sort of unashamed and courageous when it comes to performing mitzvot. And then there's a time to be less strong. There's a time to be a little bit more obedient, and that is when we are talking about doing mitzvot. So az panim legehenom, someone who is recalcitrant, that person goes to gehenom. Uvosha panim, and someone who is shamefaced, someone who is quiet and isn't always trying to resist, that person will go to Gan Eden. That person goes to heaven, right? And there seems to be an understanding here on Yehuda ben Tema's part that if you think you deserve something, if you're az panim, if you're brazen, that means that you don't deserve it. And if you don't think that you deserve it because you're a boshet panim and you say, this is too good for me, I don't deserve it, that's actually a sign that you do deserve it. So the people who are brazen, the people who are obnoxious, the people who are always demanding, those people are demanding themselves all the way to hell. And the people who are meek, the people who accept, the people who say, no, it's okay, it doesn't have to be me, those people are paving their own paths to Gan Eden. And then at the end of this Mishnah, we have a little bit of a prayer. The prayer goes, Yihi ratzom lefanecha Adonai Eloheinu. May it be the will before you, Hashem, our God, Shetivne Irach b'mheirav yaminu, that you build your city, that is Jerusalem, speedily in our day, v'tein chalkeinu b'toratecha, and place our portion in your Torah. One function that this little prayer serves is to sort of signify that this is actually the end of Masechet Avot. We do have three more Mishnayot in this perek, and we also have an additional entire perek, perek vav, but actually many scholars believe that this is really where Pirkei Avot ends, and this Yihi Ratzon is put in there so that you know actually this is really where the book ends. And I think that one of the reasons why the content of this prayer is that God rebuild Jerusalem and that God place our portion in the learners of Torah, among the learners of Torah, is because when you spend a lot of time learning Pirkei Avot, you develop this kind of very idealized vision of what it was like to be among, you know, the people who lived at the time of the founding of Rabbinic Judaism, the people who were there when it was all happening, and how much they cared about it, how much they knew about what it meant to serve God. And there's a kind of wistfulness that sets in when you finish all of Pirkei Avot, and you've learned a lot, but you also realize that you're not one of the Avot, that you're someone who learns from them. And there's a kind of desire to want to go back in history and to be there when it all began. We're continuing with Mishnah Chaf Aleph, ostensibly with the words of Yehuda ben Tema again, Hu haya omer, he would say, Ben chamesh shanim lamikra, 5 years old is the right time to start learning the written Torah. Ben eser lamishnah, when you're 10, that's the proper time to learn the Mishnah, the oral Torah, that's the Torah of memorization. Right, so first you'll learn how basically to read, how to read psukim from the Torah, and then when you're older, you're going to have a strong enough vocabulary, strong enough understanding of the way words work, and you're going to start memorizing the halachot, memorizing the Mishnah. Ben shalosh esrei lamitzvot, when you are 13, that's when you are obligated in all of the mitzvot. Ben chamesh esrei latamud, when you are 15, that's when you're ready for reasoning, for logic. We use the term Talmud for the Gemara, right, for the commentary that's framed around the Mishnah. But, of course, at the time when the Mishnah was written, there was explanation and exploration of what the Mishnah means. Ben shmona esrei lachupa, when you are 18, that is the proper time to get married. Ben esrim lirdof, when you are 20, that's the right time to chase. Now, nobody really knows what this chasing is. Three main traditional interpretations are either that lirdof means to chase actually after women. So if you don't succeed at 18 to get married, 20 is the time to really pick up the pace. Another option is that we're talking about food and sustenance, right? When you're 20, it's time to get a job. It's time to stop lolling around your parents' house. And another option is lirdof actually means to run in war. That we see in the Torah that the age at which you're eligible to become a soldier is 20. So maybe lirdof means to go out to war. I think another option is that lirdof actually just means to chase, and that your 20s is the right time for you to be chasing down and pursuing different options until you get to ben shloshim lakoach. When you're 30, that's the time to be strong. That's the time to figure out who you are and to focus your energies in that direction. Ben arba'im labina, when you are 40, that's the time of understanding. This is connected to the notion that one should only study Kabbalah, certain other esoteric texts, when you reach the time of 40. That's when you're settled and you have a lot of insight. Ben chamishim la'etza, 50 is the time for advice. And I think it's very interesting to note that there's a full 10 years that you have to wait from beginning to understand things to when you start dispensing advice about them. Ben shishim lazikna, 60 is the time of old age. That's when you're an elder. That's when you can be considered a sage. Ben shivim laseva, 70 is the time for hoary-headedness, white hair, really being like, now you're an old man. Ben shmonim lagvura, 80 is the time of strength. Ben tishim lashuach or lasuach, 90 is the time, either lashuach meaning to bend over, or lasuach meaning to converse. I often think that ben tishim lasuach might be a reference to the way that people, as they get older, start to kind of tell really long stories and start to ramble on, and that's appropriate for people when they're in their old age. Ben mea ki'ilumet, 100, it's as if you've already died. Vi'avar uvatel min ha'olam, and you're gone and sort of null in the world. People died much earlier at the time of the writing of this Mishnah. I'm sure Yehuda ben Tema never met a person who was vibrant into their hundreds. And so he imagines, there's theoretically there might be a person who's 100 years old, but he assumes that that person is already done for, which we know is not the case anymore. There are plenty of people who are in their hundreds who are still strong, who are still cogent, and still contributing to society. I just wanted to point out before we move on to Mishnah Chaf Bet that there's a very nice contrast between the Yehuda ben Tema of Mishnah Chaf and the Yehuda ben Tema of Mishnah Chaf Aleph. Because in Mishnah Chaf, Yehuda ben Tema says, you got to try to be more than you are. You have to be a leopard, you have to be a lion, you have to be an eagle. And in Mishnah Chaf Aleph, he says, yeah, you have to press yourself beyond your natural limits. But there are sort of natural limits. We don't expect a 5-year-old to be able to dispense advice. We don't expect a 20-year-old to be hoary-headed. Right? Everything has its stage. There are sort of natural points of psychological and intellectual development. And given the stage that you're already in, then you should push yourself a little bit beyond. We'll do the last two Mishnayot of this parak. Mishnah Chaf Bet, Mishnah 22. Ben Bagbag Omer. Ben Bagbag is, as you can hear, a sort of interesting name. And we understand that Ben Bagbag is probably a convert. And there are two different theories for how the term Bagbag refers to a convert. One option is the gematria of Bag is Hey. And the gematria of Bag is Hey, right? 2 + 3 = 5. And Hey is the letter that was added to Abraham's name when Abraham became Abraham, right? When Abraham really became the progenitor of the Jews, he had a Hey added to his name. So a kind of honorific for a convert would be to be called Ben Bagbag, or as we see in the next Mishnah, Ben Hey Hey, right? Someone who is the son of Hey and Hey, the son of Abraham who had an Hey added to his name, and Sarah who had the Yud in her name shifted to a Hey. Another option is that Bag is an initialism standing for Ben Ger or Ben Gerim. But either way, in Mishnah Chaf Bet and Mishnah Chaf Gimel, in Mishnayot 22 and 23, we encounter these distinguished converts who have a tremendous amount to teach us about the Torah. Ben Bagbag Omer, Ben Bagbag says, Hafuchba v'hafuchba, turn it and turn it, decholaba, because everything can be found within it. Right, and the it here seems to be the Torah. Uva techazeh, and you should see through it. Visiv uvleba, and you should get old and worn out in it. Umina la tazua, and you should never move away from it. She'ein lach mida tova heimena, because there's actually no better character trait than it. And you can really see here sort of a convert's perspective. I've been in other religions, I've been in other areas of the world, and I found that the Torah is the best. And I can tell you sort of from experience, you want to leave the Torah. But as someone who came from outside into the Torah, I'm going to tell you that everything you need to find is right here. And Ben Hehe continues in Mishnah Chaf Gimel. Ben Hehe says, Lifum tzara agra. According to the pain, according to the struggle, is the reward. And I think that this statement is also very touching coming from a ger, because someone who is a convert doesn't grow up with all the Jewish knowledge, all the Jewish resources that many of us have and many of us take for granted. The person who is a convert had to really work for every letter and every Mishnah, often encounters a lot of suspicion, often encounters a lot of resentment. And then Hehe says basically that it's worth it. Right? Lufum tzara agra, according to the pain, is the reward.
This is Rabbi Ethan Tucker. We're getting to the end now of the 5th chapter of Avot. And in this chapter, we've been dealing with anonymous teachings. No one's really been named in the context of this chapter yet, the way we're so familiar throughout the tractate of having different sages come forward with their teachings. But here at the end, a number of figures do get named and step up. And a few comments on this section. Yehuda ben Tema, who is the sage here, who talks about the ways in which we're supposed to fulfill the will of our heavenly parent, talks in very colorful terms about these four animals that are supposed to somehow represent the dispositions that we bring to serving God. And he starts off with Heve Az Kanamer, which is being bold as the leopard or maybe tough as a tiger. And it captures the notion that part of what it means to serve God, part of what it means to act out any mission in the world, is to recognize that we won't always be in environments that support those choices and those causes. And sometimes you actually need to be tough, to stand out, to actually make a bold display of that commitment. This becomes actually the rallying cry centuries later of Rabbi Yaakov Bar Asher and his code, the Tur, where he talks about actually the cardinal principle of fulfilling mitzvot, and again, really living a life of purpose more generally, is to recognize that there'll be times where you're surrounded by people who may even mock or ridicule you for your commitments. And Yehuda Ben Tema here invites us to say, you need to be az, you need to be strong and bold in acting out that mission. But interestingly, his second statement then continues to say that az panim legehinom, the same trait of boldness, of strength, when it displays in one's face as opposed to in one's conviction, becomes a despicable trait, one that on some level condemns someone to some sort of life of Gehenim or even hell, we might translate this. It is boshet panim. It is a face that is shameful or kind of shy and withdrawn, which ultimately goes to heaven. And this, I think, gets to a really core element of the complexity of character traits. That same condition of being az, of being strong and bold, when applied to conviction and allowing oneself to be consistent about what one believes in, is noble, even necessary in the service of God. But when it starts to kind of harden one's face and one's ability to interact with or respect other people, the same exact trait of being unswerving, unforgiving, uncompromising becomes far from an accolade that we apply to someone and something we urge them to move away from. This ends with a prayer here, this Mishnah, asking that it be God's will to rebuild the city of Jerusalem and to give us a place in the Torah that will reside there. And scholars have suggested that the odd placement of this suggests that this was actually originally the end of the book of Avot. So even though our study is going to keep going on because various traditions got tacked on to this work over the course of the generations until they became seamlessly integrated, it is important to note here that for those who have been along the journey of our study of Masechet Avot, at an earlier time, the Siyum, the completion celebration, might in fact have been here. But nonetheless, we do continue with some reflections on stages of life. And one of the things that suggests that these things are later additions to the Mishnah is we have a number of milestones here, which don't necessarily accord with all the ways that rabbinic sources used to think about, particularly mitzvot, various kinds of obligation, and age. Specifically, in this list, we hear that ben shloshesrei la mitzvot, that the age of mitzvot is 13. And this is really the classical rabbinic text that gives us the bar mitzvah age for boys at age 13. And the notion that before that age, there's not really a full or at least biblical level obligation really to do most of anything. But there is something artificial about that, and any parent who's ever had a kid and an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old knows that there's not a night and day difference between them and a 13-year-old, even as there is clearly some significant maturation that happens around those ages. And in fact, some scholars have pointed out that a close look at earlier passages in rabbinic literature indicates that they had a much more fluid sense of when obligation and responsibility kicks in. So you have another passage in the Tosefta in Tractate Chagiga that talks about a child being obligated to start to wave the lulav when they know how to shake sticks or other objects, or the obligation to start saying the Shema day in, day out when you learn how to speak. A kind of sense that you begin being phased into various practices and obligations as you're able to do them. Over time, for all kinds of interesting reasons, there's a tendency towards sort of formalizing when certain thresholds are crossed and a quantification of obligation in a little bit more of a binary mode. And that ultimately culminates in this Mishnah saying, well, the mitzvot really kick in at 13. But whenever you see a rabbinic text or a discussion that assumes that you're supposed to be getting children into practice and you don't just treat it as a kind of free-for-all for the first 13 years of their life, That's actually a residue of a much deeper memory of the ways in which mitzvot and practices that we want people to adopt later in life, in full as adults, actually need to be inculcated from the earliest stages. This, I think, is a really interesting and good insight in general for educating people towards things. We might have the sense that we only really fully kick in our expectations in a formal way at some point in the process, but any successful program of education actually has to begin phasing people in as soon as they're able to grasp onto any piece of it. I'll just say one word about these oddly named characters at the end, Ben Bagbag and Ben Hehei, who are given these short aphorisms that end our chapter. And I particularly love the first one here and want to just say one word about it. Hafoch ba vehapech ba dechol haba, turn it over, review it, turn it upside down, for everything is in it. And this kind of praise of the study of Torah, and the idea that the Torah, both in the sense of the literal five books of Moses, but also the larger flowering canon of rabbinic oral tradition that we see so intensely in this tractate, is something that one should investigate in depth, for everything is in it. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this phrase is the everything, the chol that is in it, actually seems to be something that you knew about or encountered or were deeply troubled or engaged by prior to ever entering the canon. In other words, it doesn't seem to be simply a statement here of, well, turn it over here because then you'll learn all the things that are in this set of texts. Rather, when we are convincing someone to enter into Torah by saying, you will find everything in it, what we mean is some notion of, there is an everything that includes things you've already determined are important to you or you're already looking for, and we're convinced that you'll find it in there. And that's actually a deep statement about what the enterprise of Torah is about, because what it means is it's not just about a passive process of the empty vessel of a person being filled up by the content of this canon, but it is also a process of learning to find the intuitions and the quests, the searching that we are on a journey towards in these texts that we then encounter. That is to say, part of the process of Talmud Torah, of Torah study, is also a process of self-discovery and a process of discovering truths we might have some intuitive sense about, but don't yet know really how to articulate them in language, much less in Jewish language, in a way that ties it into our tradition. When we say turn it over for everything is in it, we are not just testifying to the fullness of this literature, we're actually testifying to its incredible ability to contain truths really from all walks of life and from all kinds of perspectives. And that sort of elasticity and fullness of Torah is a piece of what Ben Bagbag really wants us to take home and leads him in the end to say, Ein lach midah tova himena. There is really no better portion in life than this. There is no better way than to spend one's time than this. And certainly one of the things that this journey through Masechet Avot, now as we complete the fifth of the six chapters we'll be studying, is about, is not just learning, encountering, and even mastering the material in this tractate, but finding the ways in which its sayings actually amplify and give language to things we might have felt and expected and intuited for a long time, but now discovering them deeply rooted within our tradition.
Next week's Mishnayot are Perek Vav, Chapter 6, Mishnayot Aleph through Gimel, Mishnayot 1 through 3.
For more opportunities to be involved in our 10th year celebration, please visit mechonhadar.org/siyum. Join us on Thursday, March 2nd for our Siyum celebration, and be a part of our first ever National Shabbaton from March 3rd through 5th, 2017.